Hi, welcome to The Blueprint, Designing Your College Process. I'm Megan Toomey. I'm a college counselor at the Hill School, a coeducational, independent, boarding and day school for students in grades 9 through 12 and postgraduates. We strive to provide comprehensive and professionally sound advice, so we thought starting a podcast might be another way to maintain open lines of communication, offering information that will guide our students and families throughout their college process. To do this, you will hear from people in our office, our school, and outside guests who are experts in college admissions in their respective fields. Thank you for joining us for The Blueprint. Today we welcome our very own Lisa Rothling to The Blueprint. Ms. Rothling has served as the Director of College Counseling at the Hill School since 2019. Prior to Hill, she was the Worldwide Director of Clinical Services for Army Department of Defense Adolescent Support and Counseling Services. This program was in 7 countries and covered 19 schools. Ms. Rothling came to Hill to build a clinical counseling model in a school setting that includes individual, family, and group counseling, as well as crisis intervention and short-term group therapy for students. She is passionate about her work with students and enjoys opportunities to consult on various mental health topics whenever possible, such as joining us here for The Blueprint on my podcast. Ms. Rothling also enjoys teaching and providing training on several issues impacting adolescent development. Her specialty areas in counseling include treating teenage anxiety and depression, substance abuse, and working with the LGBTQ+ community. She is a licensed professional counselor, licensed addictions therapist, and approved clinical supervisor with 18 years of experience working in residential and school-based settings. Today, Lisa and I wanted to have a conversation about the pressures of the college process and how parents can help their students work to balance their mental health throughout the process. Here is one thing we know: parental support can play a huge role. Lisa, thank you so much for being here with us and sharing your expertise in navigating adolescent mental health. I suppose we should start at the beginning. Can you tell us what you mean when you say psychological or mental health?
Yeah, thank you so much. I'm really excited to be here today to talk about counseling and the state of mental health right now for adolescents. So I think the most important place to start is understanding what psychological health is. And to me, psychological health and mental health can mean a lot of things. But at the end of the day, it's really students and adolescents feeling the right thing at the right time. And the most important part of that is them being able to bear the unpleasant times in their life in a healthy way.
That's great. Certainly a big part of adolescence in general.
Yeah. And, you know, as a parent myself and just working with teenagers for so many years, there's just some things that have happened in our recent, society with the pandemic and a lot of other things that I wanted to touch base on, because it certainly has shifted mental health, but I wanted to paint a clearer picture of what that looks like. So first and foremost, the pandemic, we've been talking about this for years now, but when we look at post-pandemic data around mental health and adolescents in particular, the way I think about this is a tidal wave. So never in history, or my history, I should say, was I exposed to 1 million deaths. Was I exposed to the upheaval that 1 million deaths in society, what that may have created? And so I've heard a lot of folks saying, the pandemic has tilted adolescent mental health over. And when you look at the research and the data, it's actually untrue. So adolescent mental health was on the rise about 7 years before COVID hit. And what I mean by on the rise, we had higher and more significant rates of anxiety, depression, suicidality, eating disorder behaviors 7 years prior to the pandemic. So the experts were certainly concerned about this uprising trend, and then the pandemic hit. And when the pandemic hit, all of those trends were exacerbated by numbers. We had more than 140,000 children in the United States lose a primary or secondary caregiver. And we know that youth of color were disproportionately impacted. And so there's lots of pieces playing together with even our social climate and our mental health climate. And so adolescent mental health at this current day is different than it was when we were a teenager. And I think sometimes as adults, what we tend to do is we think back to our adolescence and we say, I did it this way, or I coped that way, and then we apply all that knowledge to teens today. And the difference is many of us were not exposed to things like social media. We weren't exposed to Facebook and Instagram and the pressures that we know through research can really have a negative impact on adolescent mental health. So using this old adage of, you know, it makes kids more resilient, it makes them stronger, it really needs to go by the wayside, because what teens today are being exposed to through social media, through our current pandemic, and through social climate is very different than when we were growing up.
Yeah, those are certainly alarming statistics. You know, it's really helpful to hear that. And then you throw, you know, with a large number of teens dealing with the mental health challenges before starting the college process, then you throw in the stress and potential rejection that the process can, you know, can dish out, really. It's just, like you say, it seems like it's a tidal wave. It's, you know, it's like all of these moving pieces that are coming together. You know, and as parents, we didn't deal with all of these moving pieces. So it can be hard to know how to help your child through this process. As a parent, is there anything we can do to best support our children and guide them, you know, to healthy outlets?
Yeah, so I think the first piece for me is just understanding the scope of mental health, like we were just talking about. I mean, currently today, the American Academy of Pediatrics, the American Academy of Child and Adolescent Psychiatry, and the Children's Hospital Association have actually declared a mental health emergency for adolescent and children's mental health. And to me, what that says is our mental health of adolescents, you know, they're struggling. And then when we break that down even further and we think about high-achieving schools, there's so many positives for high-achieving schools in terms of building resiliency and community and understanding, you know, how to become an adult. Mm-hmm. But when we look at research with students who attend high-achieving schools, we know they're 5 to 7 times more likely to suffer from anxiety or depression. Wow. And we believe, we being the experts in mental health, attribute that to the pressure that is cultivated through not just the college process, but the high achieving school setting. And so there are positives and then there are challenges, and it's important to know that students attending high achieving schools are gonna certainly feel that pressure. And that's the whole basis of this podcast today, is just how do we balance that pressure and mental health with the college process? You know, when you think about your adolescent developing, you know, an average teen gains 50 pounds and grows 1 foot in a space of 4 to 5 years. And on a typical day, this research out of Duke is fascinating. You know, teens will experience 26 different mood state changes. So adults, we experience 4 to 5. Okay. So that is average. That is normal. That means some kids are experiencing more and some are experiencing less. And so we throw all of these pieces together. And when we think about teenagers today, it's just not as simple as they'll get through it and they'll get over it. Mm-hmm. So back to your question of, you know, what can we do to help this balance? And, you know, one of the things I'm a huge fan of is what are we doing as parents to either perpetuate or to, mm-hmm. You know, fight against this whole pressure that students are feeling. And so Lisa DeMore is a famous clinical psychologist, and I like to quote her often because she really has this angle around adolescent stress that is really helpful. And what she talks about is, you know, how much of what our kids learn and how they learn to manage stress comes from observing how we as parents manage it as a parent, you know? So what are they seeing and what are they noticing? And our kids watch us for cues about how alarmed they should be about life's difficulties. And when we accept that stress leads to growth and we help our kids to do the same, we can create a self-fulfilling prophecy for our kids. So what does that mean? Like, we have to do a gut check. We have to really ask ourselves, like, how often am I criticizing? How often am I micromanaging or catastrophizing or comparing my student or my child to another child? I think just doing a quick reality check on herself, on her parenting, because I think when it comes to the college process, the student has worked so hard, the parents have worked so hard, and we want to see the finish line. We want to see, you know, the end goal, whatever that is. And a lot of times what that is coming down to is what school the student gets into.
Yeah, that's, I mean, I'm a mom to 3 daughters and my oldest just turned 10. I've seen the good and the bad reactions where I see myself in her. So, you know, and I think the quote goes, children have never been very good at listening to their elders, but they have never failed to imitate them.
Right.
So, you know, yep. I can certainly see that from my own experience, even though my children are not yet at the college process. And I think, you know, right now we're at the start of the college process and heading into more stressful times. But when it comes time for getting news from colleges, like, you know, I think it's really important for parents to, again, remember this and understand that parents play a role in helping teens to not catastrophize when they receive rejection letters.
Yeah.
Because that will really help them.
Yeah, so understanding the difference between emotionality and fragility. You know, we want... adolescents are emotional. They're gonna appear to be over emotional because they're going through 26 mood state changes in a given day, and so they're gonna appear to have more emotions. But really, it's important to understand that there is a lot of cushion that's built into the system. You know, their emotions tend to arrive in waves, you know, that rise and crest and recede on their own. And if we keep this in mind, we can help our kids by responding to their distress in ways that are empathetic and supportive. Rather than responding in an anxious or minimizing way, we need to validate what they're feeling and also kind of keep them on track with a supportive and empathetic approach. You know, helping them to understand, you know, that they are troubled right now and that times are troubling. However, you know, the evidence of their robust mental health is going to play through when, you know, in the ways that we talk to them. So, for example, you know, saying to your adolescent, like, it makes sense that you're worried about this. You know, I hear what you're saying. I do think you're going to find your way through this. Like, giving them the courage to understand that they can get through it and that they are capable. And most importantly, that the outcome is not tied to them as a person. Mm-hmm. So whatever school they get into is not directly tied to them, their self-esteem, who they are. You know, we have to always come back to this statement that I say all the time, and that is we need to expect their best and not the best. Mm-hmm. And so really understanding what is my child's best and are they giving their best, and really kind of checking in with myself as a parent of, I think that they can do A, B, C, D, and E, and that should get them into X college. Mm-hmm. That may not be on track with what they're feeling and wanting, and most importantly, what they're capable of.
Yeah, and I think... you know, that's what we're here for, right? Is we know those numbers. It is not the same as, you know, to use your quote earlier, it's not the same as when we were kids.
Right.
It's not the same as when we were applying to college, particularly with the advent of the holistic approach to college admissions. You know, it kind of comes with an unfortunate intertwining of a student's personal identity and their college application persona, which can wear on a student's actual self-perception and cause more long-term damage. You know, the college admissions process only exacerbates the issue by asking students to showcase their personalities in order to become, you know, part of the chosen few. There was a, to quote Matt Feeney, who wrote in The New Yorker, students are under pressure from themselves, from their parents, from the general message that success in America requires a prestigious degree. And the colleges do their cruel part in ratcheting up the pressure when they gloat about their tiny acceptance rates. And, you know, I think you said it earlier, but really we want to drive home that the truth is wherever you attend college just does not define who you are, your worth, or your abilities. I want to say that again because it's really important that everyone understand that the truth is that wherever you attend college does not define who you are, your worth, and your abilities.
Yeah, and, you know, it's interesting. I was just reading an article about the top 50 companies. We're talking Google, we're talking Netflix, you know, the places that students really aspire to go to the college to get the job. And when you look at their hiring practice, the five questions that they're measuring their new hires on, only one of them has to do with skill content and knowledge of the field. The four other areas that they're weighing way heavier in the process of hiring somebody really has to do with emotional intelligence. How creatively can they problem solve? How can they adapt to conflict and move through problems and problem solving? So this really high level emotional intelligence is really more important than any other skill when you're applying to these very high level companies. And it's interesting how they've designed these interviewing processes to really kind of suss out, like, it's not about necessarily where you went to school and how great your grades are. It's more about how do you connect, how can you problem solve and be creative, really more emotional intelligence kinds of things. So, you know, students often cannot make that connection. They feel strongly a lot of the times, or at least students we're seeing in counseling, if I don't get into this college, I'm not going to become X, you know? Mm-hmm. So there's this jump to, if I don't go to this college, then I can't be whatever it is I'm thinking about. And so I think just talking with your kids about that falsehood, you know, it's really going to come down to your hard work. It's going to come down to how you interact with others and a lot of emotional intelligent pieces, and not so much where you went to school and what your grades were.
Yeah, I think the emotional intelligent piece is interesting because, you know, what you and your office are trying to do is give students the techniques and the tools to help build that, so that when they go to college, they are successful in handling these, and then college and beyond. And you're giving students or you know, parents' children the opportunity to be successful like through their own growth. And do you have any advice on how to help students and their parents, like, for a lack of a better way, not to take it personally, not to let the outcome define who they are, how they feel about themselves?
Yeah, so I'm a big fan of the and in both theory. And what that means is you can feel two things at the same time. You can feel disappointment and you can also feel joy. You can feel anger and you can also feel relief. And so I think when students are applying to colleges and parents are going through this college process, it's important to think about the process, you know, as an up and down experience. And students are going to feel both overwhelmed, and then they're going to feel excited. They're going to feel disappointed when they get news back that they haven't gotten into a school, and yet they might still feel hopeful. And so I think as a parent, if you can focus on the and slash or, the both things happening at the same time, instead of just the one presenting negative emotion, it's really helpful. So you didn't get into this school, which actually opens doors to other schools, and really trying to keep you know, a positive mindset about this decision is not going to define you in the long term. It may define this moment right now, and it may make you feel bad right in this moment. And I think validating that and having empathy around that is great, but it's not going to define who you are as a person, you know, 5 months from now or 5 years from now. And so I think when they hear this from adults that they trust and they respect, it gives them a longer tunnel vision of how to get through this.
That's great. Yeah, I think ultimately as parents, we want to empower our children, you know, and let's be clear, we've said it twice already. The process is not the same as when we were applying. It's not even the same as 5 years ago. The competing priorities high school students face are quite intense today. After a full day of school, high school students frequently attend a club meeting, go to sports practice, then off to a passion project or community event. And after all that, they have to get their homework done, eat dinner, and hopefully shower. The devotion to this is exhausting, and pressure-filled schedule of competing priorities are all achieved with the college admissions process looming in the back of their minds. The drive to do it all, to be the perfect student, the perfect athlete, the perfect community citizen, all in hopes of being admitted into their dream school. This constant state of be better, do better, what you're doing is not enough, creates a thought process in these students that it's difficult to shake. It's the house guest that often doesn't get the clue that they've had their cake and coffee and it's time to go home. The goal is to address it early so that students do not create a self-induced pressure cooker mindset for the rest of their lives. Is there anything parents can do to help support their children and ensure that their kids don't ultimately feel that it's never enough?
Yeah, and so with all that said, you know, the number one thing I want to reiterate today is that even if you're a parent who's not putting pressure on your child to get into a certain school, they're going to do it internally. They're attending an environment where that is fostered just by attending a high-achieving school. They're going to put that pressure on themselves. I think first and foremost, having fun with your child on those breaks, doing fun things. You know, talking about the college process is really important, but maybe doing it in a less serious way, you know, maybe focusing more on the emotional intelligence and talking with your student more about how they're doing in general, rather than did you get that college essay in? Did you do this? Did you do that? They already feel that pressure. And honestly, you have full-time college counselors here at the Hill School. That's their job, is to help guide that process and to help keep those deadlines. And so when they're hearing it from, you know, the school space and also from the home space, it can become very overwhelming. So as a parent, you know, making things more fun and giving them a space if things are very serious for them in the school setting, for them to take a break, for their brain to just kind of have a rest and just talk about fun things. And, you know, I have some ideas around, you know, how to build empathy with your teen and talking with them. And I'm never a fan of asking adolescents, like, how are you? Yeah. It's just, it's a close-ended question, because you're going to get a fine, okay, good. I'm good. And those are words we don't allow in the counseling center, by the way. We just don't, it doesn't tell us anything. And so, you know, by changing your questions around your teen about, you know, just things like, what made you smile today? What was your high and low? Who did you sit with at lunch and what'd you talk about? You can learn more about your adolescent's day-to-day functioning and connect with them. And just know more about how they're doing by changing these questions, and create and cultivate a space for them to be more open. What I find a lot of times is kids really, during the college process, tend to shut down emotionally. They're so hyper-focused on the process and all the things they have to do that they forget to check in with themselves around how they're doing and open up to their parents. I mean, they can be pretty closed off as it is. And so I think it takes, like, I always say you have to have a black belt in counseling to learn how to talk to adolescents, because they can be very shut down or guarded. They want you to think they're doing just great or they're doing fine, so they may not let you in. You know, asking them a question like, you know, if you could have changed one thing about your day, what would it be? And you'll get a glimpse into what they feel they have control over and what they don't. And I think that's really important through the college process, because they often feel powerless to the process.
So as a parent, what if we are working with our students and implementing some of these techniques and we still don't feel like it's really hitting home or really helping our child?
Yeah, that's a great question. And so, you know, I feel like all teenagers are a bit fragile, but when we talk about fragility, we really want to be thinking about who's prone to depression. And if your son or daughter is prone to depression or already having underlying mental health issues, it's a really good idea to get maybe some professional support involved. The Hill School has 5 licensed providers, and we easily can do an assessment and just kind of see if some additional counseling support would be helpful. Because of these trends in mental health right now, especially around suicidality, it's really important to catch these things earlier, because if they are clinically depressed or clinically anxious, we can work with them and give them some different strategies, skills, and tools, because this process is going to go into their sixth form year. It's going to go into their transition year into college. So I would definitely say reach out to, you know, the Hill Counseling Center or even another professional who might be licensed to further assess your child.
So if the child is hesitant to reach out themselves, the parents can initiate that contact?
Absolutely. Yeah, we have lots of parents who call and say, I've just noticed A, B, and C. They don't seem quite like themselves. And many of those kids will call in and just kind of do a quick, you know, meet and greet and just talk about what counseling is and what it isn't. And almost always those kids will say, yeah, this could be really helpful for me. And I always say, you know, the more of a village we have built around our kids, the better off they are. They might feel more comfortable telling a counselor in confidence how they're feeling. Because a lot of times, you know, as close as we are with our children, they're anxious to disappoint us as parents. Mm-hmm. And so they don't share openly all the time about how they're feeling. Or if they are sharing and you're concerned about what they're sharing, that's even more of a reason sometimes to get some additional support.
Yeah, exactly. That's great advice. You know, I can't really think of a time when mental health is more important than when we're transitioning from high school into college. I think there's just a lot of change that's happening, a lot of uncertainty. You know, at this time in their lives, our students are likely making the first truly adult decision, you know, of their life, obviously with the help and guidance from their parents. But it's really the first time they have a big say in mm-hmm. what their future is going to look like. And it's scary because there's so many unknowns and uncertainties. We all know how hard it is as a parent to sit back and watch your kids struggle or be uncomfortable. Do you have any advice on how to handle uncertainty?
Yeah, it comes mainly from just the common sense of not perpetuating that uncertainty. So when our kids are uncertain, we want to validate them, and we also want to just sit in the uncertainty with them. So when I see kids getting revved up about, I don't know what I'm going to do if I don't get in, and if I don't get into this college, then this thing's going to happen and that thing's going to happen. Most importantly, just listening. you know, we are fixers. We are mm-hmm. fixers as parents. We are fixers as adults. I think just listening to them talk is really important and not trying to fix that uncertainty. The next piece with uncertainty is really just providing a stable, empathetic response, which is that must be really hard to feel that much uncertainty right now. And we can't fix it. We can't guarantee they're going to get into the school. We can't mm-hmm. guarantee their life is going to be better when they go to college, because it may not be. But what we can guarantee is that it's pretty awful to sit in uncertainty. And I'm here with you. I'm here with you in solidarity as your parent. I'm here with you if you want to talk about it. And you'll oftentimes notice with that shift that they feel more a sense of control with their emotions and their ability to get through it. And the last piece I want to say is that adversity is not a bad thing for any adolescent. Going through adversity, in my opinion, as a, you know, a person working with teen mental health for the last 18 years, I think it is vital to their success as an adult. So if I can get through something and know I can get through it in a semi-healthy way, then I know I'm capable. Mm-hmm. And feeling capable is what we want our adolescents to feel. More than anything, we want them to feel happy and capable and healthy. But they can't do that unless they go through adversity and they know that they're going to be okay through that. So saving them from this, problem solving it for them, none of those things are actually helpful. When there's uncertainty, we sit in it with them. We are empathetic. We try to not problem solve. And we also acknowledge that it's not easy for anybody. When we look at uncertainty studies, there's actually research on this. Adults are actually not better at this than adolescents. We're just not humanly hardwired or designed to not know the next thing that's coming our way. And so, you know, how do we expect an adolescent with a developing brain and hasn't even quite figured out their own thought processes to handle this better than we do? So we shouldn't. We just have to sit with them through it and reinforce the positives. You know, I think that listening to them and being empathetic, not encouraging the anxiety piece, like, well, if you would have turned that essay in sooner, if you would have written about this that I told you about, or if you would have taken that AP class, none of that is helpful. You know, them learning how to navigate their life through this college process can actually really start to teach them as a young adult how to navigate other parts of their adult life when they go forward, because they're going to think back, oh yeah, I didn't get into that school and I'm okay. I made it through and I'm okay. And what did I do to be okay? And if they don't have that history in their mindset of what to rely on, they're not going to know how to do that in the future.
That's great. I just love how changing, because parents, you know, are coming from a good place. It just doesn't always come across that way. So it's really great to have that vocabulary of how one small change in how you say something can really impact very differently.
Yeah, and doing a self-assessment. I do this when I do a talk every year at this time of year for parents when they come here for Parents Weekend. And the first thing that I ask parents always is, what is my anxiety about my son or daughter getting into college? Do an honest self-assessment. Say it's an 8 or it's a 9. And then take it a step further and ask yourself, why is that? What does it mean if my son or daughter doesn't get into that college? Is that more about me? Is it more about my ideas or opinions about what is success and what isn't? I mean, I often do see parents and teenagers on different, they have different ideas about what success looks like. And if your anxiety is high around the college process, I guarantee you that's going to trickle through in your conversation and communication with your child. So that might be more about you than it is even about your child. So I would encourage you to check in with yourself about where your anxiety is and what does it mean.
That's great advice, I think, for any parent in any situation, but obviously particularly with the college process. Again, I think intentions are always coming from a place of love, but isn't always helpful at that time. So I have been a college counselor for 10 years and have had the honor of being a part of many family college processes. I've seen it bring families closer together, and I have seen it damage relationships. I want to conclude with a summary of tips that can help create a positive environment, relationship, and ultimately a positive experience as your families navigate the college process. But first, I'd like to start with a reflection exercise. Please take a moment to reflect on the people who have impacted your life. Do you know where they went to college? Does it matter? Remember to acknowledge and accept the amazing gift your student possesses, and remember that this process is about your child. It's not about what you want or the experience of your friends and their children. Start with listening before providing an opinion. Be the parent who takes time to explore college options you haven't heard of and choose your resources carefully. Don't start the process with a college list. Be open-minded and see a bunch of different places. College is not the same as it was 20 years ago or even 5 years ago. Let your child learn more about who they are, how they learn, what they care about, and how that fits. Continue to encourage and model good, healthy habits, but prepare your children for ups and downs that they will inevitably face, and use the tips that Lisa shared with us today. Please build a partnership with your child's college counselor. You do not need to hire an independent counselor. This process can be extremely emotional and stressful. It works best when communication between students, parents, and counselors is transparent, honest, and positive. Let us guide you and your child through this process with expertise and care. It is our privilege to do so, and we love what we do. We hope you take these tips as ways that you can try to help support your child through the college process and help reduce their stress and anxiety.
Yeah, I think at the end of the day, what every parents want for their child is to be happy and to be functioning, you know, higher functioning. And so as much as that child can separate the college, not, you know, it doesn't make it who I am as a person. It doesn't mean I'm going to be success or failure later on. You know, that's the most important thing. And when kids can't separate that, there's a problem. So I will be successful if I blank. And what we want kids to feel is successful outside of what college they get into. And so it's fine to have goals and it's fine to shoot for the stars if that's a goal, but it needs to be intact with self-esteem. It needs to be intact with how you're talking as a family. And the minute that a student feels like, my happiness is dependent upon this college entrance, there's a problem, because that means that there's already a construct built into that child's mind that if this thing happens, I'm going to be happier. And that's not the way happiness works. It has to kind of already be there as a foundation for the most part, and self-worth has to be intact. And so we just really need to think about, as adults, how are we perpetuating that, or how are we helping or hurting our students through this process?
That's great, Lisa. Thank you so much for your time. It's such an important topic, and it's, you know, I hope that we'll continue talking about mental health and how it's affecting our children today and how it's evolving every day post-pandemic, because, you know, a lot of those statistics are alarming, and it's not something we can just say, oh, they're soft, or, oh, toughen up.
Like, yeah, my favorite thing I hear these days is, well, when I was, you know, when I was in high school, we had to deal with A, B, or C, or this is going to make them stronger and more resilient. And there's actually no research, even post-pandemic, that says that these kids who went through the pandemic are stronger now because dot, dot, dot. In fact, we're in a national mental health emergency. Like, there's a state of emergency right now with mental health. And so we do need to pause, and we need to shelve our own bias around our own childhoods, and just really think through all of these challenges that students have. And college process is by far one of the biggest stressors, you know, for students right now, and so, or in, at this age. And so, you know, they start thinking about this long before they are juniors in high school. They start thinking about this probably in junior high. And so I think we as adults have a lot more power than we think on how we talk about the process with them. It really can make a difference, for sure.
Great. Thank you so much, Lisa. I really appreciate your time.
Absolutely. Thank you.
The Blueprint is written and hosted by me, Megan Toomey, Associate Director of College Counseling at The Hill School, and produced and edited by Nathan Taubkin, The Hill School's Electronic Media Studio Coordinator. To access resources and additional information about the college process, please visit www.thehill.org/collegecounseling. Thank you for listening.